guys. Hi, I'm Aditi.
I'm Anushka.
And welcome back to the Creepy Tales podcast.
Yay!
Wow, I am so excited because...
I just want to get in.
Because obviously, if you guys didn't listen the last episode, we narrated a half story.
Yeah.
So we don't know what's happening and what happened, rather. So we are really excited to dive into it. Also, how are you, Anushka?
I'm fine.
Are you fine? There's a weekend lockdown here, and then everything is shut before, like after 11 in the morning on the weekdays. So situations are a little tense. But yeah, we'll really urge you guys to
stay safe, stay in your homes.
Yeah, take as many precautions as you can. Yeah. Sanitize your hands, your homes, everything. Also, if it would be good if you could, if you're not Indian, then you would not know the word kadha.
Yeah,
it basically is a drink, a mixture of herbs. It's very beneficial and it's very medicinal. So if you could just search the word kadha, that's K-A-D-H-A, and you could find a recipe somewhere. You could like drink that and you'd be like a little fine. It's really beneficial. And you could take steams and so we just wanted to get that out there. Everyone, please stay safe. Anyways, with that being said, we are again reading a story from the book called The Ghosts of the Silent Hills, and this story is titled Shadow in the Dark. So in the last episode, we narrated some part of it. So basically, kind of like a recap would be that this person's mom and dad have been shifted in like a very remote place, a remote place in the hills, and the writer's father's brother is due for a visit, and the father actually tells him that you should not travel during the night. But the brother is persisting because he wants to meet the family as soon as he possibly can.
So I mean, I get that, but it's not worth the risk.
No, he shouldn't have traveled. So he was traveling late at night. And guess what? Something really bad happens. Their bus breaks down. So everyone is kind of rattled at this point. The driver, the conductor, and there are 9 other passengers. So so they really don't know what to do, and these roads are considered very dangerous. So that is where we left off. They are stranded in the middle of nowhere. They cannot find any kind of human life anywhere, and let's get going now. The brother's name is Nandi.
Nandi.
Short form. Nandi once again counted and confirmed the presence of 11 men now stranded in the middle of nowhere. He must think of some way out of this predicament. He weighed all the possibilities in his mind and then asked Ram Prasad. I think he's a bus conductor or the driver.
I think bus conductor.
Alright. So I kind of forgot. Bhim Singh is the bus conductor. Sorry, Bhim Singh is the driver, right?
Yeah.
Bhim Singh is the bus conductor and Ram Prasad is the driver. Is what I feel like.
Yeah,
I think Ram Prasad is the driver. Because I am pretty convinced now. Is there a village nearby? We can walk to it and spend the night there. Ram Prasad shook his head vigorously. No, Sahib, there isn't any habitation for miles around us. Only about 8 miles ahead, there's a small village of 6-7 houses. But to reach that village on foot, it'll mean a walk of at least 2 hours, maybe more, in this dark. He shrugged his shoulders and continued, anyway, Bhim and I can't leave the vehicle. We'll have to sleep inside till help arrives. Nagesh shook his head dejectedly. What help? Sahib, the bus that'll pass in the morning will report our plight to the head office and they will send a tow vehicle. Till then, nothing can be done. So they may have been stranded before, so they know the procedures. So, I think that's what's going
on
here.
That's a smart option.
Yeah. To just stay. Yeah. There, right? Yeah. After a disheartened silence, Nandi asked Gis consolately, nothing till tomorrow morning. You have some chance of getting a lift if you wait here, next to our broken down bus, but not anywhere else on the road. A passing vehicle will possibly stop to check if we need help, but no driver will stop in the middle of the night anywhere in this wilderness to give lift to strangers out of blue. That is also...
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that we understand that. I mean, if I was driving, I would not stop until I reach the destination. Because nobody would be that trusting, right? So, Bhim Singh instantly supported his colleague. Ramprasad is right. For some reason, even like before, this Bhim Singh and Ramprasad seem to be getting so well.
Yeah.
He's like, Bhim Singh is always supporting Ramprasad.
They are partners now.
Yeah, so I mean, that is so cool to see. This is the only solution. Stay here and wait. Although expect only an occasional army truck or a convoy at this time. But that doesn't happen every day. Nangi Sayaga Nagag. Okay, if any vehicle passes by, be ready to stop it. We could hitch a ride to our destination or at least kill Narkanda and escape from the possibility of spending the night in this forsaken jungle. He threw a glance at the broken down bus resting against the mountain wall. There was barely enough space for another vehicle to pass by. Even a minor deviation could send the vehicle plunging down. That just sounds
so scary.
So scary, man. The mountain roads are, like, in a way, just not safe to drive.
Yeah.
I'm so scared right now for them.
Yeah.
Shivram, a fellow passenger who ran a small convenience store, spoke in a small voice, as if his statement might come true if he uttered it loudly. What if no vehicle comes tonight? That's a startling thought, Shivram. Why are you thinking like that? Ramprasad raised his hands in a gesture to utter helplessness. Resign to the fate and be prepared to spend the night in the bus. But I tell you, I am much relieved that I have you all with me tonight. That makes me very comfortable. This Ramprasad and Bhim Singh's positivity is out of, like, through the roof.
They are stranded and they are so happy.
Yeah, so, like,
I mean, how?
Not freaking out. That is, wow, I just cannot. A few months ago, during the peak winter season, our bus had got stranded one night due to a large landslide, and except for the two of us, there was no one in the bus. Both of us had spent the entire night alone in these wilds, wide awake, singing bhajans. Now, if you don't know what bhajan is, it is kind of like a religious mantra and chanting that Indian people do. Just so that they can, like, stay positive and stuff. So, they were right to do that because we need, like, some kind of positivity. I'm shivering in cold. It was a terrible night. Won't forget it for the rest of my life. Bhim Singh clicked his tongue. We even heard strange sounds. Something was there outside the bus, walking around. We shuddered in fright. Animals, Himalayan bears, Nandi's query was ignored on purpose. He covered up the silence. And if we do not get any help tonight, you'll be again sleeping in the bus and we'll be singing bhajans with you. He chortled, which seemed incongruent. Sahib, praying and singing holy songs is a good idea. Otherwise, who can sleep in these isolated forests, especially in the dark? The animals are not the only ones who pose the risk. Ramprasad gazed at Nandi worriedly. Why? Are there robbers in this area? Nandi knew it was a silly question. Even the existence of robbers in the remote area of Himachal was a suggestion akin to expecting blue whales jumping out of the river Sutlej. Crime among these simple, honest, hard-working Pahadis was almost unheard of. So Pahadis is a word and a name given to the people who live in mountains. Mountains are called Pahad in Hindi. So that's why people living in the Pahads are called Pahadis. And they are really honest and so freaking hardworking and sweet. So there is no chance that anyone could be a robber or any kind of criminal. Nandi noted a quick exchange of glances. Then Shivram remarked, "Educated sahibs do not believe in all these things. Better not begin discussing such matters now and add fear to our plight. We aren't sitting gossiping around a fire inside our protected homes." What matters? Nandi's curiosity had been provoked. Bhim Singh replied in a hushed tone, "Sahib, we simple villagers have grown up with all kinds of beliefs in ghosts and chugels, the wandering spirits." Oh. Chugel is again a word for kind of like a witch. The main reason for our anxiety is the accident about a year ago, somewhere around this area. It could have been the exact spot. Who knows?
Wow.
It is difficult to know in this dark, but this is not the right time to discuss it. I'm having like jitters and shivers right now. Neither the right place, voiced Shivram. So Shivram seems to be like very religious and he does not want to talk about this, but Nandi is like...
He's very scared.
Nandi was rather amused and he laughed. "Don't worry, I am not afraid of ghosts, for I really don't believe in them. Never met one. Go ahead, tell me about the accident." So the people who do not believe, like, I understand that you do not believe in a ghost and that is completely fine, but do not question their existence. Right? So even when even a few years ago, I did not believe in ghosts, but I was never this idiotic to ask, you know, to do silly things.
If they seem scared, why are you
provoking them and kind of making them even more scared? Like, if you know, if you don't believe in that, why do you want to provoke the thing, right? So anyways, he halted and frowned. "Wait a minute, I think I heard about a terrible mishap that had occurred last year during the monsoons before I came to Jiori. Are you talking about the bus full of passengers that fell down the deep gorge into the river? That itself sounds extremely scary and you should just stop talking about that."
"Stop it."
A creepy silence embraced them all. The birds outside are so loud. This area, I swear to God, guys, is like a bird sanctuary of something. We literally live in the middle of a bird sanctuary. Anyways, the whooshing waters of the Sutlej. I still don't know how to pronounce this river's name, so I'm really sorry if I'm butchering it. But you get it, right? Became more defined and menacing. Without adding a word, the passengers quickly began to board the bus, as if seeking shelter against some invisible danger. With dwindling spirit, Nangi watched them all disappearing inside the bus. When Ramprasad and Bheem Singh too chose to go back into the bus, Nangi threw a quick glance around and then followed them. He noticed that the passengers were no longer sitting on their original seats when they had begun. Just give a second while I am turning the page. when they had began the journey, each had laid claim to a double seat. But now they were all huddled together on a few front seats. That makes sense. I would not leave anybody. I would just like stick in the middle. mostly I'm like a very window seat girl. But when something like this happens, I do not care if that's the case. I want to stay away from the windows. Yeah. Even the driver and the conductor had chosen to sit among them. Only his original seat behind the driver's lay vacant. Once Nangi was inside the bus, Bheem Singh hurriedly got up and shut the door. He bolted it and then checked it by giving it a hard shove. Satisfied, he returned to his seat. With other passengers crowding around him, Nangi raised the topic of the fateful accident again. Ramprasad, you must have known the unfortunate driver of that bus. Yes, Sahib, we both had joined the service about the same time. He was young, almost my age, not even 40. He left behind little children, the youngest not even a year. My God.
No.
Year old. It was a terrible accident, Sahib. Not a single survivor. Ramprasad shook his head despairingly. You see, Sahib, this stretch of about 5 kilometers has a whole lot of loose rocks. Of course, who would know that better than yourself? True. I have inspected the road thoroughly. These big boulders are a real nuisance. Come rolling down any time without warning. It gets worse during the rains. Nothing can be done unless we build a huge retaining walls. Acha, we'll build huge retaining walls that will need a lot of money. Yes, Sahib, it was one of those exceptionally huge boulders that had become loose and came hurtling down. According to the eyewitnesses, the bus was tossed like a toy by that speeding boulder. And then both went tumbling down into the Satluj. It was a terrible accident. The bus was washed down for another half a mile before a big rock in the middle of the river finally halted its flow. There was no chance for any survival. The river was in full speed. The listeners shook their heads sadly. A few joined their hands and chanted, Ram Ram, Jai Bhole Nath, Jai Ma Bhavani. So these are like the gods of Hindu religion. Ramprasad closed his eyes for a quick prayer before speaking barely above a whisper, eyeing the dark exteriors through the window. And Sahib, since then people have heard spirits crying in this area at night. I think Bheem and I heard them that night, the night we were stranded. To add to the fears of, you may say, foolish people like us, 2 months ago, a similar accident took place at almost the same site. The government jeep, you know, with its 6 occupants, crushed by a big boulder, all sahabs killed and the driver too. Wow, so this accident, they explained it in the earlier part. So if you haven't listened to the last episode, I think you should, because you would not understand what we are saying right now. So you should just, like, if you haven't, then go back to that episode, the last one. Listen to it and then start listening. I think we should have said that in the beginning. But yeah. Anyways, really, the same spot. Nangi's brows were furrowed. Yes, Sahib, and people said it was due to the vengeful spirits of those dead. Even the temple priest of our village agreed. So the drivers were wary of this section, and I was, as usual, driving so cautiously with prayers in my heart. I wonder how I missed the wretched rock. I really wonder. Nangi had never believed in ghosts and spirits. He might have liked listening to ghost stories in his childhood, but later his mature mind perceived them as fabulous imagination of some overtly irrational minds. But at present, the stark wilderness, the dark cold night, haunting sound of the gushing river rising from the deep gorge, and the thought of some wandering spirits of the people who had unnatural guests in the area, it all sent shivers down his spine. Nevertheless, putting up a brave front, he rubbished the cause for fear. I know such accidents are sad, especially for those who lose their relatives, but the spirits of the dead wandering, I really don't believe that. He persuasively shook his head. I told you, Sahab wouldn't believe, Shivram informed. Shivram is like, I like him.
Yeah. Shivram informed others, as if he had unearthed a great scientific secret. It is we simple people who fear the wandering souls of the dead. He got up from his seat and came to sit next to Nandi. Sahib, we believe that when someone dies an unnatural death, the spirit does not achieve its salvation till it has completed the unfulfilled task of its life. For example, spirits of young virgin maids roam in search of mates. Living mates for the dead. How's that possible? Nandi scoffed. It's true, Sahib. There was a time I too wouldn't have believed such tales. It was Desraj speaking. Sitting cross-legged on his seat, he had been quietly listening to the discussion till now. Well, into his 50s, he ran a grocery store in Jiori. It was when my young son was troubled by such a spirit that I realized they actually exist. Whoa. Shivram nodded in support. Oh, really? Tell me about it. Nandi tried smiling cynically, yet appeared more like a curious child. Desraj looked around seeking approval. A few men squirmed on their seats in anticipation. Some threw quick glances at the dark windows in apprehension. No protests were raised, for who could deny oneself of the romance with fear? The ambience couldn't have been better.
Yeah.
Desraj folded his arms and cleared his throat. Others snuggled closer.
I love the feeling of gagging around and listening to horror stories.
Yep. Nandi stretched his legs in the aisle with careless defiance. It happened last summer. Desraj looked at Nandi and, finding him attentive, nodded approvingly. Late one evening, my son Ratan was returning from a nearby village after spending the afternoon with his friend. It was well after sunset. Darkness was slowly creeping in. He was striding homeward, merrily singing. He has always been a happy-go-luck fellow, you know, a good singer too. He was still a mile away from home when on that lonely stretch, he stopped dead in his tracks. a beautiful young girl sitting on a rock beside the path, footpath. My Ratan, barely 17, was enamored by her beauty and stood gaping at her. She returned his stare with a luring smile.
Ooh.
Yeah. He stared at her stupefied.
Stupefied.
A silly boy, even though he had never seen her before. He smiled at her and then at last, realizing that it wasn't proper to stare at a stranger, thus he walked on. The girl began following him.
Wow.
Ratan must have been thrilled at the attention. Nandi threw up his head and laughed. Sahib, that's exactly the mistake he committed.
Wow.
Well, knowing that a well-raised, decent girl would never do that.
Mm.
Yeah. Do what? She didn't do anything. Nandi raised his eyebrows and a sardonic smile playing on his lips.
Hmm.
The Desraj frowned disapprovingly. In the first place, she shouldn't have been out alone in a secluded place at that late hour. And then stare at an unknown young male. No, no, our girls are thought majesty. He looked around at the others who nodded, supporting his statement. My young boy's mind couldn't gasp that fact. Perhaps he wasn't thinking at all. He thought he was a dandy on whom the beautiful young girl was granting her attention. He was delighted by her interest in him. Naturally, Nandi grinned. There were a few cuffs and some light laughter that peeved Dasraj. No, Sahib, first listen to the whole affair.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead, I won't interrupt. Nandi raised his hands impishly. Dasraj took a deep breath and continued. The girl continued to follow him, my boy, overjoyed by the attention, kept on turning time and again to look at her. She followed him around three or four curves and then all of a sudden she disappeared.
Huh?
One moment she was behind him, next moment there was nobody. Dasraj stopped to check the impact of his account on the listeners. A nocturnal animal howled from somewhere close. All eyes shifted towards the door. The heartbeats increased. Dasraj broke the silence. Ratan looked around, even went back a few curves, searching to see where she had vanished. He didn't find anyone, not a soul. Finally, his tube light switched on. He was frightened, realizing he had probably seen a ghost and hurried home. He didn't share this incident with anyone at home. A few men briefly glanced at the windows as if they expected someone there, furtively eavesdropping. The darkness outside had deepened.
Damn.
Nandi waved his hands skeptically and broke the silence. She must have been a young girl from a nearby village in love with your son. Might have hidden in a bush or... No, Sahib, have patience.
Oh.
I haven't finished yet. Dasraj spoke fervidly. I don't know.
He is like telling the story in like such suspense.
A night or two later, after dinner, Ratan was in his room, engrossed in his studies, preparing for his matric exams.
Like 10th exams, 10th grade.
He felt a sudden cold around him, like being black in icy water.
Whoa.
Winters.
He looked up from his book and there she was, standing in front of him. He looked at the window, thinking she had sneaked in through it. But it was shut. The door was shut too. How did she enter? As he stifled his scream, the girl stretched her arms, inviting him. No village girl would behave in this manner. They are shy. Even my silly Ratan knew that. Dasaraj paused and threw a discreet glance at Nandi. Nandi avoided him and turned to look out. Darkness and solitude stared back at him. A mild fear crept into him. My boy was scared. Dasaraj brought him back to the narration. Frightened out of his wits, how had she entered his room when the window and the door were bolted from inside? Who was she? At that moment, he was sure that she wasn't a human. Before he could shout for help, she faded in front of his eyes, like mist evaporating in heat. My silly boy still remained tight-lipped. He should have at least let me know.
Oh.
Yeah. Dasaraj let out a long sigh of despair. Then it became her ritual to visit Ratan every night. She wouldn't utter a word, but only extend her arms, inviting him. Ratan would shrink into a ball and tremble. In the beginning, she would not appear for more than a few minutes. She then began visiting him in his dreams too, touching him, hugging him. Were those dreams, or was she there in reality when my son was half conscious? In a trance, I can't say. No other member in the house ever saw her or heard her coming. So you had no clue what was happening to your son? Asked Nandi. No, Sahib, not a clue. I did notice that Ratan wasn't eating well, was getting thinner and unhealthy.
Hi.
He appeared listlessly and I got worried that he had gotten ill. I took him to the village Hakim, like a doctor. Yeah. He went reluctantly. It was only after the Hakim questioned him repeatedly that he broke down and told us about her. By then, the spirit had become persistent. he told us that in the middle of the previous night, he had woken up. He had found her in his bed, lying next to him. He could see her, but when he daringly extended his hand, he felt he had put his hand inside an icy mist. Ram Ram, that must have been frightening. Yeah. Ram Prasad shook visibly.
My goodness. What is this?
Woof. Dasaraj noted, initially we couldn't believe she existed and thought it was a juvenile mind's fantasy. Ratan continued to lose weight. From a healthy pudgy boy, he became a bag of bones, became like a charcoal. Oh. The change was alarming. He began roving around meaninglessly. Stop talking, stop studying. He had to be force fed. His exams were approaching and I didn't know what to do. I made sure he was never alone, that somebody was constantly with him. But that didn't deter her. She began to visit many times in a day. So you also began to see her. No,
none of us saw her, but my son would become pale and begin to tremble. He would gaze in one direction where she would be standing. We thought he was losing his mind, becoming crazy. We were all at a loss how to help him. The Hakim didn't have any cue either. Then we went to the temple priest. He listened to us, discussed things with my son alone, and then he decided to arrange for exorcists.
Wow.
So the priest knew it was a ghost troubling him, Nandi said. Yes. Then they came dressed in black for exorcist. They looked daunting with their long open unkempt matted hair falling till their waists and face painted white and red.
Yeah, I mean Indian exorcists,
yeah.
Literally
they look like very ghosts. Scary. Yeah.
They look worse than ghosts. So scary.
They carried brass tridents and some other stuff. They made a big bonfire and seated my son next to it, raising their tridents high, the weapon of Lord Shiva. They began moving in circles around the fire and Ratan chanting. Their steps kept on becoming faster and their chanting louder and intense. Oof.
Wow, yeah. I don't know what will happen to this Ratan if he is, you know, going away. The sound of exorcism is just so scary to me. So we are going to end this here, yeah. And we'll wait for another week to find out what really happens. Will they ever get away from this scrambled place?
Yeah.
And will the night ever end? Will they get help? There are so many questions in my head. But we have to move on because
yes.
We also have two other really short stories to narrate. This is so much cool. I'm like having so much fun. Anyway, so this is a new short story and we are going to be narrating the entire thing. So don't worry, not leaving you in cliffhanger. "911 Calling" by Indiana Jones. So just the title is like you don't know what's going to happen. But yeah. This took place when I was about 10 years old. Just the sound of being a kid and being haunted is, oh my gosh. My mom had rather quickly filed for divorce, but she only had a part-time job and made very little money. So finding a place to stay that was affordable and available immediately was tough. A friend of hers told her that she and her husband had a little mobile home that was currently sitting empty and we could rent it practically for free till we figure out something else. We love good best friends.
Yes.
We love it. That's
yep.
like so cool. Just giving someone their house.
It's just
remarkable.
So amazing.
Yeah. I immediately didn't like the house.
Oh.
Part of this, I am sure, was due to my parents' abrupt divorce and having my life turned upside down, because it was also just the house itself. I get that, because sometimes you would just enter a room and just feel negative vibes.
Yeah,
I get that. We lived in a mountain town and this mobile home was up a steep mile-long driveway. Beautiful pine trees surrounded it, but the house itself looked abandoned and out of place. It had two bedrooms and two bathrooms, so my brother and I shared a room and my mom took the bedroom with the attached bathroom. It was a very 70s home with wood paneling and gated fixtures. Again, there we go with the old houses, they are just scary. There were also areas that showed strange damage, like holes in the wall that were badly patched up. For whatever reason, I immediately refused to use the hallway bathroom. I wouldn't even step into it. My mom never really asked me why or questioned it, but let me use her bathroom. Anyway, my mom was gone a lot, trying to find whatever work she could. So I would be home alone a lot after school and on the weekends. She was only 10. That is, oh my gosh. Like, the parents could plan better, yeah. Right? Like, have a nanny or something. I can understand that she is like broke, but yeah, whatever. Why is the dad not worried? He could have arranged for the nanny, right?
Yeah.
That's, oh my gosh, I cannot. Parents sometimes, like some parents can just be so irresponsible. My mom always told us to not to answer the door, but we should always answer the phone in case it was her. So when the phone rang one afternoon, I figured it could be my mom since no one else really had our number yet. There was a woman on the phone who sounded very concerned. "Hello, this is 911 returning your call. We received your call, but we got disconnected," the woman said. I immediately got a sick feeling. I told her that I did not call 911, and she asked me if there was anyone else in the house who might have called. I said I was home alone. But I started to get really worried that maybe I wasn't. She said she would dispatch police to our address just to make sure everything was okay. At that point, I was terrified to be in the house, so I sat outside and nervously waited for the police, who showed up in about 15 to 20 minutes. The officer asked me if I had called 911, and I said no, but they claimed I had called them. The officer just sort of shrugged and said, "This kind of thing sometimes happens. They say that it can't, but the numbers can't get mixed up, but it happens." He did a cursory glance around the outside of the house and left. I tried to convince myself that the officer was right, but it was just a mixed up call, and hopefully whoever did actually call got the help they needed. Wow, she's so thoughtful, yeah. Acton. About a month later, the same thing happened. I got another phone call from 911 saying that they had received a phone call from my number. I told them again that it must have been a mistake. The woman on the phone scolded me a bit, telling me that 911 wasn't something to play around with, and I was preventing people from getting help. She didn't dispatch police this time. Again, I was really worried someone was in the house, so I cautiously checked and made sure all the doors were still locked. I don't know why, but I always kept the hallway bathroom door closed. Maybe because of the eerie feeling I got from it. As I was checking the house, I just knew someone was in that bathroom. I was terrified. Part of me felt like I needed to open the door to check, maybe to prove myself wrong, but I was too afraid. Same girl. I would have done the same thing. So I just sat in the living room watching that door. It was so quiet in the house that after a few minutes, I swore I started to hear faint little sounds coming from inside, like a kind of shuffling noise. I asked my mom to check the bathroom when she got home, and she quickly looked inside. She made me come and look to see that it was empty, and I was letting my imagination get the better of me. The 911 calls happened 3 more times over the coming months, and only when I was home alone. The 4th time, the dispatcher told me I could face criminal charges for what I was doing, and they would contact my parents. I hung up the call, sobbing and terrified. I had that feeling that like someone was in the house again, but if I called 911, they probably wouldn't even show up. My god. Maybe that is, I feel like the ghost was setting her up.
Yeah.
Right? And it was so smart because I'm not like kicking the side of the coast, but it was really smart because now even if she calls 911, they would not believe her. Wow. I felt like the girl who cried wolf, only it wasn't me. It was like someone was playing a horrible twisted joke on me. I sat and watched the bathroom door again, hearing noises like someone dragging their fingers across the door. Oh, that's the worst sound ever. I decided my mom was right and I was probably just letting my imagination get away. I decided to try and leave the bathroom door open so I wouldn't get so freaked out by the thought that someone was in there. Then I got the fifth 911 call. This time though, after I hung up the phone with the dispatcher, the bathroom door slammed shut. God damn it, she had left it open and now it was slammed shut. Door slamming shut is a scary scene. I cannot believe. Whew. I ran all the way down our steep driveway and found a place to wait till my mom pulled into the drive. When she arrived, she was angry with me for leaving the house, but she saw how upset I was. I think she thought I was acting out due to the stress of the divorce. Mom! This mom! I refused to be alone in the house again though. So we worked it out so I would stay later at school or go to a nearby nearby friend's house till she got off work.
That's good.
Not long after this, we got a notice from my mom's friend that we needed to move out of the house because her mom needed a place to stay. I was so grateful to be moving out. I told my mom she needed to tell her friend that something was wrong with the house, but my mom thought that was a ridiculous way to pay back someone's generosity. Probably right, but they should be informed, right? I moved around a lot the next few years and tried to forget about the house. It wasn't until I was older that I really thought about it. I witnessed an accident and had to call 911, and the fear and paranoia all came flooding back. I decided to do some research, which honestly I wish I had never done. A few years before we moved in, a woman was killed in that house in some kind of domestic dispute. It was days though before she was found shut up in the bathroom. That woman was trying to call 911 because she thought that she needed saving.
Like a different story.
Yeah. Okay. I feel like I was angry with the ghost, but it makes sense why she called 911 every time, right? Because she was scared for her life and she was living the nightmare even after she was dead. Oh my gosh, that is so tragic and scary.
This is Maraya.
Huh?
My husband and I live in a small unincorporated town on the outskirts of a bigger city.
What's about these outskirt towns? We did not plan this, but it's happening in this episode.
Although we are almost 50 years old, we are 30 to 40 years younger than any of our near neighbors.
My God.
Most of them have grandchildren who visit regularly and drive them wherever they need to go. Not so for the man I usually just called Professor.
Okay.
His wife Alina died 12 years ago.
Aww.
I only knew her briefly, but she and the professor were one of those life goals kind of couples. I loved spending time with them. They were so erudite and witty, and clearly still deeply in love.
Aww.
Alina's passing hit her husband hard. For the last year, he had been battling cancer with no bus service in our rural area and cabs from town an expensive long wait. I ended up driving him to the doctor's. Oh, so sweet. The professor had been in the US since his 20s, but still he retained a charming foreign accent. His name was pronounced as Owen. Owen? Okay, I don't know. Usually when he phoned me, he would say, "Good afternoon, Owen." Okay. Yep. Sometimes he would call in the wee hours in pain, able to only gasp, "Owen." I would drop the phone and run to his house to help him with his meds or take him to the city's emergency room. He was adamant about not staying away from home. He knew the end was near and wanted to go in his own bed. On 1st October at almost 4 a.m., my cell phone rang, showing the professor's number. When I answered, a strange voice asked, "Owen?" "Yes," I answered. "Professor?" "No." The voice giggled, "This is Maria. I am taking him tonight." Then I woke up. I was sitting up in bed with the phone in my hand. My husband and our dog were sleeping soundly. So the phone hadn't really rung, or had it? No. I started to call the professor, but if he was managing to get some sleep, I didn't want to disturb him. So I got up and dressed quietly, and the dog and I slipped out to the backyard. I could see the professor's house from there. No lights were on and everything was quiet. It wasn't comfortable though. I went ahead and dialed. 25 rings and no answer. Damn, I knew them. I went back in and woke up my husband. We walked to the house and knocked. Nothing. We had to phone the sheriffs. They broke in. The professor had died, seemingly peacefully in dead. Because of our unincorporated location, any of the chores which would fall to professionals in an urban area are taken up by neighbors here. So that evening, with the deputy's supervision, the families on our block began to sort through the professor's papers. We needed the deed to his burial plot and any kind of will or link to distant relations. I looked through a small scrapbook of old photos that was on his nightstand. There was no cousin Marco from the old country, or nephew Bob NYC 1997. It was mostly pictures of Alina and the professor, and there never spoken of young daughter Maria, who had died in Oaxaca in 1971. Whoa.
No, Maria took him. The daughter who had died took him. No.
What?
No. I cannot. Yeah. I cannot with
it. I'm just in shock.
Wow. No way.
No.
No freaking way.
Oh, the poor man.
Yeah. Nah. My God.
Oh.
I am so can. Oh my gosh. Nah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Just.
Anyways, that is where we will end the episode. We really hope that you enjoyed these stories. Also, Conjuring 3, is it?
Yeah.
Conjuring 3 is coming. Wow.
I am so excited.
Yeah, I cannot wait. It's coming on June 4th. Yep. Conjuring franchise has definitely been one of my favorite horror movies. Honestly, like one of the best. And I'm so excited because the movie, I think it's directed by the director of The Curse of La Llorona. And there were many jump scares. So.
Yep. It's gonna be very scary.
Yeah, and the trailer looked so good. Whoa. And I'm so scared for Lauren especially because it seems like she's gonna like and Conjuring movies are always like so mind-boggling.
Yeah, we always there must be a very good story here.
Yeah, I love the entire thing.
Theodoros.
Yeah, Theodoros.
Yeah.
We call the theories Theodoros. It's our inside thing. And also, if you are looking for a horror movie to watch, I would recommend you guys to watch the movie Stree.
Stree, yeah.
It's a Hindi movie. So it's spelled out Stree. So it's a story about this woman who is haunting a town. It's a comedy horror.
Yeah.
But when you end the movie, and I don't want to give it away, but it's so smart.
Yeah.
The ending is so smart. I did not get it for the first time. But it was superbly done. Like most of the film, you wouldn't be scared because it's like very comical and stuff. Mm-hmm. But the ending is everything. It is so good. So definitely recommend.
The concept is also very good.
Yeah, the concept is really good as well. So really recommend you guys watching that movie, especially to the US listeners. And we see like so many listeners are foreign. So if you are not into Hindi movies, then you need to get into them because not all of them are very good and perfect, but some of them are exceptional and we'd love to give you recommendations. Also, Bhoot, the movie Bhoot, it's spelled out as B-H-O-O-T.
Bhoot, the haunted ship.
Yeah, so it's about a ship. So we live in Mumbai.
Yep.
And we actually did not know about this, but apparently a haunted ship, out of nowhere, this large ship just ends up in a shore in one of our beaches.
Juhu Beach.
So this ship is so big.
It's humongous
and it just ends up on one of our shores and we cannot get it like away and it cannot get it to sail past.
Yes.
And it's so mysterious how it ended up like coming to one of our shows because there was no one aboard. There was literally no one, and it's not like a small boat which would like sail away with the waves, right? It's like a humongous ship. It had to be haunted.
10 floors.
Yeah, it had
ten floors
high.
Wow.
How did that humongous ship end up on our shows, and then what happens? The whole haunted thing. Obviously, everything is not true, but the story about the ship landing in the shore is true. And that is just mind-boggling and you should watch the film right now. Yes. Literally.
It's amazing.
Watch it tonight. Anyways, so do you have a gag joke to end with? I do this to myself. That's so frustrating.
Why can't your nose be 12 inches long?
I'm not a Pinocchio.
Because then it would be a foot.
No way. No way. Have another one.
What's brown and sticky?
Wet mud or something.
A stick.
That is so annoying. Anyways, thank you so much guys for listening. This was so much fun and We literally cannot wait to see what happens in the story.
I'm just so excited to read.
Yeah, so thank you so much again for listening. Follow us on our Instagram and we'll see you next week. Bye guys.
Bye.
Love you.